be seen.
What about that old oak tree by the back fence? Leanne asked.
I didn't even think of that.
During a storm a few years ago, a huge old oak had split in half and fallen into two pieces. The way the pieces had fallen on the ground created a nook where Little Bit and her friends had made a clubhouse of sorts. The tree would provide both cover and concealment.
That's perfect. Grab some water and your weapons and get out there.
Is it going to be safe, Daddy? Little Bit asked.
Sure. No one will look in there. Just stay inside and hide, okay?
She nodded, wiping tears from her cheeks. Looking at her, I had a thought and went back to the safe.
Hey, Mel, I said, as she was filling water bottles from the Berkey.
Take these. If it comes to it, let Little Bit load it.
I handed her a box of 22 shells.
You're going to give that to her?
Yes, because it could come down to it.
Little Bit came out of her room with a Hello Kitty backpack. Seeing me, she asked,
Why do you have my cricket?
I handed her the rifle.
Because you're taking it with you, just in case.
Usually, when the rifle came out of the safe, she was excited and could hardly stand still. But this time, she was quite reserved. Looking up at me with big, serious eyes, she asked,
Where's the bullets?
Mommy has them. If you need them, she'll give them to you.
She nodded. Okay.
I gave all the girls a hug and a kiss, then Mel. They all looked so scared, but there was no more I could do. Getting them out of the house was the best I could come up with.
Can't you come with us?
Mel pleaded.
Believe me, I want to.
But if they come, it will take all of us to get through it.
Be careful, Dad,
Leanne said. I smoothed her hair.
I will. You guys just get in there and hide. Don't come out either. I'll come get you.
Pausing, I looked at each of them.
If it looks like someone is looking for you, and they may find you,
I swallowed hard.
Shoot them.
Blank stares were all I got in return. I hugged Mel again.
Go on, get hid.
They went out the back door and headed to the tree. I watched until they were under the canopy of the old oak. It would be nearly impossible to see them unless someone was actually searching for them. Running out of the house, I jumped on the ATV and headed for the barricade. At the barricade, Jeff was off to the left side of the road, hiding in the scrub. I went off the opposite side and found a place I could watch the road.
Get everyone settled? Jeff asked.
Yeah, they're hiding in that big old down tree in the backyard.
Good idea. Getting them out of the house.
I hope it's all for nothing.
Thad found Danny, Bobby, and Mike at Danny's shop.
You sticking around?
He asked Bobby.
She nodded.
For better or worse, she replied. The only thing to do now was to wait.
Chapter 18. Fred was cracking up at Jess's retelling of the incident with everyone's favorite red-headed leader.
I can just see you two rolling around on the floor.
You should have seen it. Her eyes went wide and she jumped for me, grabbing me by the throat, Jess said, pulling her shirt down to reveal the red marks.
I got even, though. Pulled a handful of the bitch's hair out.
Fred sat up giggling and looked at Mary.
What were you doing?
Trying to disappear into the floor. The statement caused Fred to bust out laughing again. The door to the tent flew open. A man stepped in, with Singer following.
When your name is called, collect your belongings and come up here,
the man said, then started calling names from a piece of paper. When he finished, he had called the names of seven women. Mary, Jess, and Fred were in the group.
What's this about? Mary asked worriedly.
Don't get all worked up yet. Let's just see what's going on, Jess said. The women packed what little they had and waited by the front door. The man checked their IDs as they went outside. When Jess was leaving, Singer glared at her.
You're someone else's problem now.
Jess smiled at her.
If you're scared, say you're scared, she said, and went out the door. Mary came out right behind her, covering her mouth to hide the enormous smile. You should have seen the look on her face. They were led across an unfamiliar part of camp, stopping at a tent with a sign that read, Mess Hall, in front of it. This mess tent was considerably smaller than the one they were accustomed to. Once inside, they were told to take a seat. The three friends sat together, trying to guess what was going on. An older woman came out of the back of the tent, carrying a clipboard.
Can I have your attention, please, ladies?
The chatter died down as everyone focused on her.
When I call your name, please say present.
She went on to do a roll call, accounting for everyone in the tent.
Good. Now that we've got that out of the way, I'll tell you why you're here, as I'm sure you're all curious. I'm Kay Temple, the kitchen manager. This is the staff dining tent. Up to this point, we've been rotating workers through it.
She paused and looked around the room.
And none of you have ever been on that detail, which is why you're here. You'll cook for the camp staff. This is the only job you will have from now on.
She paused to let that sink in. The women in the tent shared glances and whispers. She went on to explain that the kitchen required 8 people at a time and was open 24 hours a day. There would be 3 shifts, and they would have to work 7 days a week. To temper the bad news, she told them that they would eat the same food they prepared and use the same style quarters as the camp staff. They would not be treated as they were before. No security looking over their shoulders, and they would have more freedom of movement. The catch, though, was that if they were caught doing anything that could be considered an abuse of their privileges, they would be sent immediately to the detention center in the camp. One of the ladies raised her hand.
Yes? Isn't this entire place a detention center?
No. It's resettlement camp. Believe me, you do not want to go to the detention center.
Kay then took them into the kitchen and gave them a tour of the equipment, explaining that they would be trained to use it. After going over that, she took them out the back door to their quarters, which were divided into small rooms with 2 sets of bunk beds, a small wall locker, and a table with folding chairs. At the end of the row of the dorms was their latrine. Kay took them in to show them it had hot water on demand, and all the toilets and showers had privacy stalls. The ladies murmured approvingly. For many of them, it was the first glimpse of privacy they'd had in weeks. Fred, Jess, and Mary decided to live together, naturally.
This might be a pretty sweet gig,
Fred said, bouncing on her mattress. Mary patted her mattress.
Yeah, real mattresses, no more cots.
I'm just curious to see what kind of food we're going to be preparing. Bet they eat better than we do, Jess said. Jess answered a knock at the door. It was Kay.
I want you 3 to come to the kitchen at 6 o'clock this evening for some instruction on the equipment. You guys are going to be in the first breakfast and lunch crew.
Okay, thanks.
Jess closed the door after she left. She seems all right so far.
Hope she's nice, though anything's better than Singer, Mary said.
Jess looked at Fred.
You know, this gives me an idea.
Fred sat back on her bunk.
Oh yeah, what's that?
We'll have to see how this all works, but we may be able to get food out of the kitchen and store it up. For when we break out. Fred finished her thought.
Exactly. We just need to get a feel for how it all works.
You 2 are crazy. We just got here and you're already trying to get sent to the detention center,
Mary said, a hint of disapproval in her voice.
I'm not staying here forever. No way in hell, Fred said.
Me neither, and I don't want to be resettled either. Sorry, Mary, Jess added. After sorting out their stuff, the 3 of them fell onto their bunks, with their real mattresses, and quickly fell asleep. What seemed like minutes later, they were woken up by a knock.
Hi, Kay,
Mary yawned sleepily.
You gals ready?
You bet, Mary said, and Fred and Jess followed her out the door.
In the kitchen, Kay started going over the various pieces of equipment, the large Hobart upright mixer that could mix 100 pounds of dough at a time, deep fryers the size of washing machines, the grill,
ovens, and more. Kay explained to all the women that she would set the meal plans and post them along with the recipes. She would be available for any questions and would help out with the preparation until they got the swing of things, which she hoped would be soon. Leading them to two large steel doors, she opened one. "This is the cooler, where perishable foods are stored." Inside, the shelves were mostly empty, with a few things occupying some of the space.
"Wow, real eggs. Where'd you get these?" Fred asked.
Kay smiled.
"Chickens still work. We got a large coop with more birds at it every day."
"Really? Who takes care of them?" Mary asked.
"No one in particular right now. We just try to keep up with them."
Mary smiled.
"Can I do it?
I grew up with chickens and like looking after them."
Kay laughed.
"Absolutely. I'm glad someone knows something about them. If you ladies will excuse me for a minute, I'm going to take our new chicken wrangler out and show her the birds."
She paused.
"Unless, of course, someone wants to volunteer as her assistant." Fred slowly raised her hand. Kay got a big smile across her face.
"Who would have thought? Two of you. Well, come on then."
Fred looked at Jess and smiled, holding her hands up, and followed the other two out the back door. Kay led them to a very crude chicken coop, constructed of poles cut on site and wire. The laying boxes were milk crates filled with pine needles, a most abundant resource. Mary took in the scene.
"What are you feeding them?"
Kay rolled her head to the side.
"Right now, all they're getting is scrap from the kitchen."
"Oh, that will never do," Mary said, as she opened the door to the coop.
"What are you doing?"
Kay screeched as she moved to the door. Chickens streamed out in a line, heading for the nearby underbrush.
"It's okay, they'll come back."
Kay looked out at the scurrying birds.
"Are you sure?"
"Oh, yeah. They'll come right back here. All we need to do is close the coop."
"Probably don't even need to close it.
I doubt there are any predators around here," Fred said.
"Only the two-legged kind," Kay added.
"You'd be surprised." Looking around, she added, "These damn people are the biggest bunch of thieves you've ever seen."
"Really?"
Fred asked.
Kay leaned in.
"If it's edible, they'll take it." She looked around and whispered,
"And listen, girls. On a different note, these men are hornier than hell. Tell that friend of yours to watch out. That blonde hair might as well be a damn beacon."
Mary and Fred shared a giggle.
"We will," Mary said.
"You too," Kay added.
"Young and dark like you are, they'll be all over you too. They'll promise you the world, but are full of shit. They can't deliver half of what they promise."
Mary's eyes were wide.
"I'll remember that."
Kay continued.
"Don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with a good night in the sack. Just make sure they pay in advance, if you get my meaning."
She leaned back and smiled. Fred threw back her head, laughing.
"Oh, my God!"
Kay looked at her.
"What? A woman's got to do what a woman's got to do. Remember, ladies, we've got the market cornered."
Mary blushed, and Fred shouted,
"Amen, sister!"
Mary laughed and said, "Hey, back to business for a second. Where'd they get the chickens?"
"The salvage crews. They go out looking for things we need. Cows, chickens, goats, whatever they can find."
"They just take them from people?" Fred asked.
"Yep. They just go out and take what they want. I think it's a bunch of BS myself, taking what little people have. But it's what they do."
"They don't pay the people or anything?"
"Oh, they offer them a one-way trip here to Camp Happy Land. If they try to resist, they just truss them up and throw them in over there,"
Kay said, pointing in the direction of the detention area.
"That's messed up," Fred said.
"How'd you get here?"
"I came here under my own will. My husband was killed and I was alone, so I thought this would be safer.
I guess it is."
"How'd you end up with this job?"
"I managed the school lunch program for the Marion County School Board. When they found that out, they put me in charge of all the meals here."
"Oh, so you're the one we can thank for the wonderful food we've been eating," Fred laughed.
"Hey, don't blame me,"
Kay said, holding her hands up. I gotta figure out what to do with what they give me. Of course, the food's a lot better over here than on the other side of camp. I figured they wouldn't eat what they fed us. I know I never saw any beef or goat, Mary said. We tried. They just keep bringing people in here, and it's getting harder to feed them all. Now that they're starting to move some out, it should get better. You mentioned the scavenge teams. Is that all government personnel, or do they use people from here, too? Fred asked. Most of the folks come from here. They do all the work. The government personnel just point the guns. Is there any way to get on that crew? What, you don't like this gig already? No, it's not that. It would just be nice to get out of here from time to time. I'll see what I can do. Now, let's get back. We've got a lot of work to do. As they moved around the kitchen, Jess pointed out the small metal tags riveted to most of the equipment. They were property identification from the various facilities the stuff was scavenged from. Places like the Marion County School Board, Lake County School Board, and, one that really raised their eyebrows, the Florida Department of Corrections. That's it for now, ladies. I'll meet you back here at 4 a.m. to start breakfast. Outside their quarters was a common area, with a couple of picnic tables. Jess, Mary, and Fred all took a seat. Fred pointed at a sign on a post at the end of one of the tables. No smoking. How stupid is that? Jess looked at it. Yeah, like anyone has cigarettes these days. Mary pointed to a large metal can with several water-stained butts lying in it. Someone does. Jess and Fred looked at each other. Wonder what else they've got on this side of the camp, Fred said. Yeah, I wonder, Jess said. Later that evening, Kay gathered all the women to eat dinner with the other staff. She led them to the hall, pausing outside the door. Ladies, inside you will scan your badge in the scanner by the tray station. Then, you go through the serving line, then have a seat. Kay opened the door, and they filed through as instructed. When they got to the serving line, they were shocked by what they saw. Chili mac, mashed potatoes, green beans, corn, and a cobbler-style dessert. Mary whispered to Jess as she stopped for a helping of corn. They got dessert. Can you believe it? I know. Look at all this food. I haven't eaten this good in... I don't even know how long, Jess said. After their trays were filled with more food than they would see in any two meals on the other side of the camp, they took their seats. They were surrounded by security personnel and civilian workers, identified by their badges. Kay sat with them, taking the last seat at their table. Where do they get all this food? Jess asked. Kay offered a sly grin, looking down at her tray. Honey, you know the government has plans for everything. This is just one of them. What do you mean? I mean, our government has spent years preparing for everything, from nuclear war to the Yellowstone supervolcano going off. They've been storing this stuff for a long time. Fred asked, if that's the case, then why were we fed so little on the other side? She took a big bite of the chili mac. Kay leaned in and whispered, well, you know I'm not part of the apparatus here, but it's just my opinion that they are doing that as a weapon of sorts. That's fucked up, Fred replied. Here's not the best place for this discussion. Just enjoy your dinner, Kay said with a smile. After dinner, the ladies returned to their housing area and headed to the latrine to take advantage of having a hot shower. Afterward, Jess fell back onto her bed, sighing. I could almost get used to this. Tell me about it. It's almost like living in the real world again. Jess stared at the bunk above her. You know, I think Kay might be a big help to us. Yeah. She seems like she goes along with the program here, but isn't really part of it. You know, it's really messed up that they are starving people on purpose. I mean, why? Fred ran a towel through her hair. Control. Think about it. What else do they have? There's no power or internet or cell phones or anything.
is the only thing they can take.
Mary came through the door.
That water felt so good.
Did you leave any?
Jess asked.
Mary smiled.
I tried to use it all.
Well, I don't know about you two, but I'm tired. And 4 a.m. is going to come early.
Jess lay back on the bed, her mind swimming with questions.
Chapter 19.
Morg, Jeff, you guys got your ears on?
Sarge's voice came over the radio.
Jeff keyed the mic.
Yep, we're here. See anything?
Jeff whistled and pointed down the road.
I looked with my binos, but it was empty, so I shook my head.
No, nothing up here.
It's been about an hour. Let's wait till dark and see what happens.
I looked at my watch. It'd be another 3 hours before it got dark. That would be a long time for the girls to sit under that damn tree.
I hear engines, Mike called.
Where?
Sarge asked.
In the woods behind us somewhere. Can't tell where yet. But it's more than one.
Everyone, keep your eyes open. Jeff, you seeing anything?
Jeff motioned to me, and I looked through my binos again. I shook my head.
No, road's empty.
They may hit us from both sides. Watch for it.
I suddenly felt that we were woefully undergunned. Between Jeff and I, we had one AK, one AR, and his Mosin. Not nearly enough if they rode up on Hummers with machine guns. Taking a quick look around, I sprinted across the road.
Trade places.
If they do show up here, you'll be able to engage them a lot sooner with your Mosin than I can with this.
Jeff nodded.
If truckloads of them show up, we'll have to shoot and scoot quick. There's no way we can stand here and try to fight them.
Yeah, no way. I looked down the road.
If you see anything, start shooting as soon as you can. Once they start getting close, we'll run back to Sarge.
Sounds good to me.
Jeff ran across the road in a hunch, carrying both rifles. I took his spot and tried to keep an eye on the opposite side of the road. The likelihood of them coming from that direction was slim as shit, but you never know.
Mikey, where are those trucks?
Sarge called.
I don't know. They moved past us. They sound like they're to the south of us now.
To the south? You sure?
That's what it sounds like.
Sarge looked at Ted.
Run down the road past Reggie's house and see if you see anything in the woods.
Ted jumped up and jogged down the road, his weapon at the ready. He had traded his M4 for one of the 203, since Mike had taken one of the saws. Doc was behind the other one at the intersection with Sarge. Ted went past Reggie's, trying to stay below the overgrown fence for some concealment. He traveled along the fence and then looked over it. Instantly, his weapon came up and he began to fire, brass flying from the weapon. Almost as fast as he loosed a 203 round, an explosion followed, a short distance shot. Doc had the saw pointing to the east and had to reposition to the south. Just as he was settling behind the weapon, a Hummer barreled out of the woods.
They're to the south, coming in behind us.
Sarge screamed into the radio, the staccato of the saw in the background.
Shit!
Mike shouted as he got to his feet.
You guys stay here and keep an eye out. I'm going to help Sarge.
He picked up his saw and ran through the yards of Danny's neighbors, scaling fences as fast as he could.
Oh my God, that's a lot of shooting,
Bobby said as she pressed herself closer to the ground. Ted was walking backward, trying to stay near the fence as bullets ripped through the vines that plaited both sides. Doc finally had the saw in position and was firing at the Hummer, stopping it. The driver had the truck in reverse, trying to back it up. Doc could see that the windshield was decimated by all the rounds. Even the gunner was forced to take cover behind the armor of his turret, firing blindly. Sarge quickly positioned the tube and slid around into it. Squeezing the trigger, the round blasted out on its high trajectory. When it exploded in the woods behind the Hummer,
Sarge adjusted the tube and squeezed the trigger again, sending another high-explosive round downrange. The explosions had an immediate effect on the attackers. Their shooting died down. Ted took the opportunity to run back to Sarge and Doc, sliding in like a runner coming into home plate. The situation there wasn't much better. The only cover they had was the large corner post of the fence he'd used for concealment earlier. Doc was laying down a steady stream of fire in short bursts. Fire superiority was the name of the game. I jumped up.
Jeff, they're behind us!
Jeff slung the Mosin and quickly got up, AK in hand. Together, we ran down the road toward the intersection.
Follow me, I said, turning into my gate.
If they were to the south, then they could come up behind my house and the girls. As I rounded the corner of the house, I collided with Meathead, and we both went asshole over teacup. He recovered immediately, back on his feet, and running without missing a beat. Before I got to my feet, I heard Jeff's rifle go off. I could see three men in the lot behind mine. They went to the ground with Jeff's shot. In the opposite corner of the yard was the tree. I looked over and saw Mel's head poking out of the brush. The men were trying to figure out where the shot had come from, and then one of them pointed at the tree and swiveled his weapon around. In a panic, I yelled, "Mel! Run! Run! Run!" I raised my rifle and began firing at the three men. Mel and the girls came out of the pile of brush as bullets started tearing through it. I was firing double taps at each man, going back and forth from one to the other. Suddenly, Jeff's Mosin went off, and I saw a pink mist erupt where one of the shooters had just been standing. The demise of their comrade caused the other two to pause for a moment, and there was a brief pause before the second shot rang out. One of the men let out a long wail of pain. Mel and the girls made it to the side of the house, all of them crying and hyperventilating. I turned my weapon again. I could hear Sarge screaming over the radio, asking Jeff where the shooting was coming from, but there wasn't time to answer. It was only us versus them at this point. Chapter 20.
"We have to do this every day?" Jess asked, leaning on the rolling pin.
Mary wiped her forehead with the back of her arm, creating a streak of paste.
"I don't know if I can."
"How many of these damn biscuits do we need to make?"
"Kay said to keep going till the flour ran out." Both women looked over at the giant bowl of dough sitting in its cradle on the mixer. Jess shook her head and went back to rolling out the pile in front of her. Fred came back from sliding a tray of them into the oven.
"It's full, finally."
"Yeah, well, the dough ain't gone yet," Mary said.
"Thank you for the report, Captain Obvious," Fred said, leaning on the table, then looked up at Mary and pointed to her cheek. "You got a little something right there."
"What?" Mary wiped at her face again with her arm, smearing the flour even further.
"Did I get it?"
Jess looked over and cracked up. Fred couldn't hold back and laughed as well. Mary looked at them.
"What? Did I get it?"
"Oh, you got it, honey. Now keep cutting," Jess said, shaking her head. Kay passed behind them, looking at the oven.
"Ladies, we have to turn the oven on once we have the biscuits in," she said, then turned a knob.
She walked over to the table they were working on.
"How y'all holding up?"
"This is a lot harder than I thought it would be," Jess said. Kay smiled.
"It'll get easier. This isn't like Sunday morning breakfast at home."
"Tell me about it. Mom always cooked it." Jess smiled wistfully, remembering the smell of her mom's fresh-baked banana bread.
"Hey, if you don't like doing this, you can go work out there."
Kay pointed to the dining hall.
"Hell no, not me. I'll stay behind the curtain," Fred said.
Jess started laughing. "Ignore the women behind the curtain." Through her laughter, Kay added,
"Who knows? You might find Mr. Wright in that line out there."
Mary looked up from her cutter.
You mean Mr. Right Now? I don't need Mr. Anything, Fred said. The get these biscuits done, ladies, Kay said, over her shoulder, as she headed for another part of the kitchen. Once their shift was over, they had to clean up before the next shift came in. Jess was rinsing out the big mixing bowl when Fred walked up and whispered in her ear,
Follow me. You gotta see this.
Fred took her to a small room crudely constructed of plywood.
Look at all this, Fred said, pointing to the shelves of canned food.
Wow, there's a lot of food here. Where do they get all of this?
I know.
When I asked Kay about it, she said it was stuff the scavenging crews bring back. They use it for crews that leave the camp, for their lunches. And get this, no inventory. They don't keep track of it.
Jess looked at her and smiled. So they wouldn't miss any, would they?
Nope, they'd never know.
Well, this takes care of one problem. Now we just need to find a way out of here.
Exactly. And I'm working on that, Fred said, with a mischievous grin.
How?
I'll tell you later, not here. They left the little room and returned to the kitchen to wrap up their duties. Back in their room, Jess asked Fred,
Did you show Mary?
Show me what?
Not yet.
Fred looked at Mary. There's a little room in the storage area full of canned food.
So what? There's canned food all over the place, Mary said.
Yeah, but this isn't like those big cans of freeze-dried stuff we use. These are small cans, like from the grocery store. The salvaging crew picks them up.
Okay, so what's that mean?
It means we could take it when we leave, Jess said. Mary looked at them in disbelief.
And just how are we going to do that? There's no way out of here.
There's always a way, Mary, and I'm working on it, Fred said.
How? How do you think you're going to get out of here without getting shot?
You saw what happened down there in the reception area. They just gunned them people down.
I don't plan to go over the fence. That's suicide. I plan to go out the front gate.
Now Jess was the one to look shocked.
What?
The salvage crews. We go out with them, then escape.
You don't think they've thought of that?
I'm sure, but like I said, I'm working on it.
You haven't even been out on a run.
Fred smiled.
No, but I'll go tomorrow.
Really? You're going out? Jess asked.
Yeah, Kay set it up.
Can I come?
Fred shook her head.
No. She said only one of us could go. Eventually, we'll all have to be on it, though. It may be difficult to get us all out there at the same time, but I'm working on an idea for that, too.
The talk died down, and they spent the rest of the afternoon napping and playing cards. The area they were in was completely off limits to the residents on the other side of the camp, but they were allowed in most areas. Jess and Fred took advantage of this fact by taking walks and making mental notes of where things were located. They wouldn't talk much in these walks, scared to say anything that could be misconstrued, and instead, they enjoyed the relative freedom of movement. As they passed a gate with several large trucks behind it, a voice called out,
Hey, Fred!
A young guy sporting a blonde buzz cut ran up to them.
Hey, Fred, he said again.
Hey, Eric. Fred paused and looked at Jess.
This is Jess. Jess, this is Eric.
He waved.
Hey, Jess. Heard a lot about you.
A little embarrassed, Jess replied.
Don't believe everything she says.
Eric smiled.
Oh, not just from her. Your biggest fan also has a lot to say about you.
My biggest fan?
Yeah, singer. She's got a lot to say about you.
Jess frowned at the mention of her.
Ugh, fuck that bitch.
Eric smiled, holding his hands up.
Easy now. Just letting you know how she feels.
The next time you see her, tell her I said to kiss my ass.
Laughing, he replied, I think she knows. Leaning in and lowering his voice, he added,
No one here likes her either.
Gee, I wonder why, with that sparkling personality of hers.
Eric looked at Fred. I hear you're going out with us on the crew tomorrow.
Yeah, Kay worked it out. She's got a list of things she wants me to look for.
Cool. That'll be fun.
A voice called out.
Vanasek! Get your ass over here and unload this ammo!
He looked back in the direction of the yelling and turned back to them. Hey, I gotta go. See you in the morning, Fred.
Nice to meet you, Jess.
Yeah, see you,
Fred replied. After Eric ran off, Jess looked at her mischievously.
So was that your plan?
Fred smiled, bouncing her eyebrows.
Part of it.
The fun part?
I hope so. He's got a purpose, and I may as well have a little fun.
Jess laughed.
I bet he's got a purpose.
How'd you meet him? He's kind of cute.
He drove the truck that brought me here. He's always dropped by to check on me, and sometimes he brings me things he finds on his trips.
Must be nice having a sugar daddy. I always heard that women in prison who slept with the guards got special treatment.
Fred looked at her.
Don't hate the player, hate the game.
Jess laughed. Oh my God, really, Fred? I haven't heard anyone say that in forever.
They headed back to their cabin and flopped down in their respective beds.
It was getting late, and both had an early start to their day tomorrow.
Their wake-up call came at 4 a.m. As none of them were exactly morning people, they got dressed in silence, save the sound of their feet scuffing the sand on the floor. Outside, they gathered in a knot.
How long will you be gone? Mary asked.
Don't know. They told me to pack a bag for 2 nights.
Fred turned her shoulder with a pack slung over it.
Well, be careful.
We'll be here when you get back, Mary said, giving her a hug.
Take care of yourself out there, Jess said, stuffing her hands into her pockets.
I will. After all, I've got my own bodyguard.
A sly smile slid across her face.
I bet he wants to more than guard it.
I hope so.
Pausing, Fred looked around.
'Cause that's part of my plan. Get him to trust me, then use that to my advantage later.
Well, be careful. Just be careful.
I will. Have fun in the kitchen. I'll be thinking about you girls while I'm out.
Jess turned to leave.
Oh, I bet you will.
At the trucks, Eric found her.
You ready?
I guess. How's this work?
Normally, you'd ride in the back of the truck, but today, you can ride up front with me.
Fred smiled.
Cool. Which truck?
Pointing, he replied,
That one. Hop in. I'll be there in a sec.
Eric ran off, and Fred opened the door. The truck was a massive military vehicle with thick glass in the window. The interior was sparse, to say the least. Comfort was obviously not the designer's motivating force. Fred climbed up onto the stiff seat, setting her bag on the center of the bench, and closed the door. She looked around at all the gauges, knobs, and buttons, thinking,
How in the world does anyone know what all this shit does?
Suddenly, the door jerked open, and a brown face with a thin mustache was smiling up at her.
You must be Fred. I'm Jose.
Hi, Jose.
Slide over to the middle seat, Jose said as he stepped up into the truck.
Confused, Fred moved her bag and slid over, trying to stuff the bag under her seat.
Where's Eric?
Always coming. We're about ready to leave. Jose smiled at her.
You didn't know I was coming?
No, this is my first trip. I don't know how this works.
It's cool. There's always 2 people up front.
Usually, you'd have to sit in the back, but we're making an exception this time.
The driver's door swung open, and Eric said, See, you've met Jose.
Eric climbed up into the truck and started the engine. Jose was fidgeting with the radio as Eric pulled the truck through the small gate, falling in line with the others.
Where are we going? Fred asked.
East.
Anywhere in particular?
We've been doing this so long now that we have to go farther and farther out. It's getting harder to find stuff, Jose said.
Fred looked over.
Oh. How long will we be gone?
We never know. Until there's enough stuff to bring back.
Eric said, as they passed through the main gate, turning out onto Highway 19. Fred sat back, enjoying the ride. It'd been so long since she was in a vehicle that it was a surreal sensation. The truck convoy continued to the intersection with 40 and turned east. It would be a long ride before they came to anything resembling civilization. Ahead, there was something on the side of the road. Eric moved the truck over to the opposite lane, getting as far away as he could. "Hey, man, that's the bus that was hijacked the other day," Jose said, looking out the window. The burned-out carcass of the bus was surrounded by mounds of brass. Every window was shattered, either as a result of the flames or bullets. Fred looked out the window at the large brown stains in the pavement that resembled Rorschach test images. A single smeared brown handprint pointed out the horror that had taken place here. "Where are the people who are on the bus?" Fred asked. Jose looked over and smiled. "Oh, we caught them all." Eric looked over in a smirk. "Yeah, they caught them all right." Fred looked at Eric for more. "They were all brought back," Jose said. "Dead," Eric added.
"They killed them all?" Fred asked.
Eric nodded his head. "Why?"
"Hey, they hijacked the bus, killed one of our guys. They got what they deserved," Jose said.
Fred sat silently and looked out the windshield. Jose announced that their destination was Ormond Beach. They were to search the business district just east of I-95. The radio in the truck crackled to life.
"Hey, you guys listening to what's going on over on the TAC channel?"
Jose picked up the headset.
"No, what's up?"
"Switch over. Someone's getting their ass shot off." Jose flipped the channel on the radio, and it immediately came alive with frantic calls.
"Yes, yes! Heavy automatic weapons fire!"
The background was filled with the sounds of gunfire.
"One truck is burning! They've got a mortar or something, and are dropping rounds on us! We've got to abort! Delta 6, break contact and abort! We're trying! We're missing people!"
"Who is this?" Jose asked. "They were conducting a raid on some place today. Sounds like they bit off more than they could chew," Eric replied.
"Why were they raiding them?" Fred asked.
Eric shrugged. "I heard something about teaching them a lesson or something, but who knows?"
"A lesson?"
"There's a cop that came to the camp. Most of the people from his neighborhood came as well. There were some hard asses who said they wouldn't come. We sent people by there a couple of times, and they still wouldn't come. So they went to get them, I guess."
"They're forcing people to go to the camps now? I thought it was a choice."
Jose smiled.
"You really think you had a choice?"
Fred looked at him.
"What do you mean? No one made me come. I chose to."
"Why'd you come?"
"It wasn't safe. There was no food, no supplies."
"Raiders came through, didn't they?"
"Yeah, a couple of times. Why?"
"You think those raiders showed up by coincidence?"
"Shut up, Jose," Eric said with an edge in his voice.
"What?"
"She'd figure it out on her own anyway, eventually."
"You mean the government sent them?"
"It's not what you think. We didn't directly send them." The realization of what they were saying slowly came to her.
"But you didn't stop them."
"Exactly," Jose said.
"So they want everyone to come to the camps."
"They want everyone to come through them, not stay in them." Fred shuddered and leaned back in her seat, trying to act calm. Meanwhile, though, her mind was racing. What was she going to be a part of in this mission? Chapter 21.
"Jeff, watch those guys. I'm going to get them out of here," I yelled above the din.
Jeff nodded without looking over and switched to his AK, laying slow and steady fire at the three guys. I grabbed Taylor's hand. "Come on, guys, follow me." I led them down the side of the house toward the front yard. Rounding the corner, I came face to face with Mark. I pushed the girls back behind the house and stepped away from the corner.
What the fuck, Mark? What are you doing? I shouted.
We both stood there with our weapons at low ready, looking directly at each other. He looked off in the direction of all the racket Sarge was making.
Who the hell is that?
The 101st Airborne.
What the hell's going on? Why are you here again?
I told you we'd be back. We've come to seize your weapons and bring you in.
Yeah? Well, how's that working out for you?
We aren't going away. There's more of us than there are of you, so call them off.
I was stupefied.
Why?
What in the hell have we done?
Why can't we just be left the fuck hell alone?
Drop the bullshit, Morgan. You're not innocent. We found the militia group you guys hung your signs around. Don't pretend that wasn't you.
I can honestly say I didn't kill any of them, even though you assholes sent them here. And one of them shot my daughter.
Mark's eyes bugged out of his head, and he started to scream. You think this is a fucking game? You are being ordered to surrender your weapons. We aren't asking. Now drop that fucking rifle and get on your fucking knees. Last chance, or I swear to God, I'm going to shoot your ass.
I felt the warm rage rise up my neck, ears, and forehead.
We who? You're on the wrong end of this fight. You dickheads might be able to push everyone else around. The starving cold masses, but not us.
I tightened the grip on my rifle. And I do mean us. There's more of me than there are of you. Haven't you noticed you're all alone? The guys you had come up from the back are toast. In an instant, I saw his weapon move. I tried to bring mine up, but reaction is always slower than action. The dirt exploded in front of me as his first round went off. I didn't hear it, though, because of the thunderous explosion beside my head. Mark's weapon dropped. He staggered toward me, then collapsed. Jeff stepped forward, the big Mosin in his hands. We stood there looking at Mark's lifeless body. Jeff cycled the bolt on the rifle, and in a detached tone, said, "The guys out back are gone." Then began to strip the gear off Mark's body. The girls came around the house. I could hear them crying, though everything was muffled from the gunfire.
"Is he dead?"
Mel asked.
"Yeah,
he's dead."
"I'm sorry, Dad. I was so scared. We should have helped you, but I was too scared,"
Taylor said from behind. She was crying, wiping tears from her red eyes. "It's okay," I said, wrapping my arms around her. "I'm glad you didn't." Leanne came over, and we included her in the hug, and then Mel, too. "Where's Little Bit?" I asked, looking around. The hug broke up, and I stepped around the corner of the house. I found her kneeling with her back on the house and her cricket in her lap, crying. I knelt down in front of her. "Are you okay?" She looked up, small muddy streaks on her face from her tears.
"I peed my pants. I'm sorry, Daddy."
The fear she must have felt crushed me.
"Oh, baby girl, it's okay," I said, rubbing her head.
"I'm sorry, I was scared. It was an accident."
"Don't worry about it. It's no big deal. Come here," I said, lifting her up.
She wrapped her arms around me, pressing her face into my neck. I could feel her wet tears on my skin. I carried her toward the door, passing the older girls. The fear was still in their faces, and all I wanted to do was hug them. Holding Little Bit as close as I could, I was aware of the vest I was wearing and all of its contents. It was between us, and I felt like it was keeping us apart. I wanted to tear it off, be closer to my child. But this wasn't done yet, and as much as I hated it, I would probably need its disturbing contents.
"Morg, I'm going to see if they need any help," Jeff said, as he started for the gate.
I took Little Bit to her room and handed her dry clothes.
"Go ahead and change. It's okay, really. Don't worry about it."
She nodded and knelt down again, and I hugged her, murmuring, "I'm sorry you were so scared, but you're all right now." She wrapped her arms around my neck and kissed my cheek.
"I love you, Daddy."
I love you too, I said, as I shut her door. I asked her sisters to go sit with her once she changed her clothes, and together, Mel and I walked out to Mark's body. Jeff had fired one round just above his body armor into his chest. I knew you'd have to kill him, Mel said, holding my hand. I shook my head. Yeah, but I didn't. If Jeff hadn't been here, I'd be dead. But you're not, and that's the only thing that matters to me. Mel squeezed my hand. Let's go inside. Pulling my hand away, I said, I can't, babe. I've got to go see what's happened. If they need any help. Tears welled in her eyes. How much longer are you going to do this? How many times do you think you're going to cheat death? She pointed off in the direction of the shooting from Sarge's crew. You're not like them. You're not a soldier. You need to think of the girls and me. What are we going to do if something happens to you? Mel, what do you think I'm doing? You think I like this? Getting shot at? People pointing guns at me? Running for my life? If I don't do it, who's going to? Those people you pointed to are here to help us. They don't have to be here. They could leave and go about their merry way, but they're here, protecting you and the girls. Protecting you and the girls isn't their job, it's mine. Nodding her head, she wiped her tears. I know, I just don't want anything to happen to you. I don't know what we'd do. Neither do I, but now, because of this, I pointed to Mark's body. We can't stay here, so start packing. Chapter 22. Exhausted, I headed for the intersection. The rest of the guys were already gathered there, talking nervously. Jeff had filled them in on the details of what had happened. How are Mel and the girls? Danny asked. Scared, terrified.
I would imagine, which is why we need to get the hell out of here, Sarge said. I know you boys don't want to.
Sarge looked at both Danny and me.
But I don't want to see anyone else here get killed.
Me neither, Morg. There's been enough loss around here. We need to get while the getting's good, Thad said.
This time, there's no disagreement from me and Danny. We simply nodded in agreement.
Attaboy!
Sarge slapped me on the back.
Take everything you need and anything that's important to you. They'll probably burn your place down, like they did mine.
Yeah, there wasn't shit left, Ted added.
I figured as much.
We can't possibly move everything. Plus, I want everything I have, Danny said.
What's worth more, you and Bobby's lives or your shit?
I have an idea where you can move some of the extra stuff, I said, explaining the shop at the house where I'd found the trailer. They surely wouldn't burn down every house in the neighborhood.
Right now, let's just get to work moving what we need. We don't know how long we have, or what they'll do after this, Sarge said.
We broke up, everyone heading to their respective houses to begin the bug out. Inside the house, it was like moving day. Chaos reigned supreme, with girls shouting from what seemed like every room of the house. Bags and boxes packed with everything from food and toiletries to clothes and cookware were stacked by the front door. Mattresses were stripped of bedding and pulled into the living room. I pulled the truck out to the shop and went in, awed by the sheer volume of what was needed and the limited amount of space we had. I started loading ammo, then moved on to food buckets, the last of the canned food and tools and camping gear. While I was loading, Sarge came into the shop.
We need to get Mel and the girls out of here as soon as we can. We'll make as many trips tonight as we can, but come sunup, we need to be out of here.
When I made my way back to the house, the living room was packed so high I had to go through the kitchen. Mel was in Little Bit's room, stuffing clothes into a plastic grocery bag.
Let's start loading some stuff. Just leave enough room for them in the back seat.
Mel looked up, red-faced.
How long do we have?
I don't know, but you and the girls will go on the first trip and stay there, and then we'll come back for everything else we can get. She stood up,
and brushed her hair out of her face.
What happened to Reggie?
He was shot while we were standing around in the corner. We couldn't even tell where it came from. They used a suppressed rifle and were pretty far away.
Why are they trying to kill us?
She shook her head.
I just don't get it. What have we done?
We've killed some of theirs, and they're pretty pissed about it now.
Yeah, but you guys didn't go looking for them. It was in self-defense.
What if they find us here? Then what are we going to do?
Let's just hope they don't. Don't think about it now. Let's get to loading.
We stuffed the truck as full as we could. So much so that glass from the back windows was pushed out, pieces falling into the driveway. I told Mel to keep packing, and that I was going to go and get Danny and Bobby. Taylor dropped a large duffel bag to the floor and announced that she was done packing.
Good. Come with me, I said, as I headed for the door.
She followed me outside to the porch. I never dreamed I'd ever say anything like this. But you stay out here and keep watch. Stay in the porch. Don't go wandering off.
I will. I'll keep watch.
She hung her head, eyes in the ground.
Dad,
I'm really sorry about earlier. I should have helped you. He could have killed you. I grabbed her hand.
This isn't a game. I'm glad you were scared. You should be. And I'm really glad you didn't shoot him. I hope you never have to shoot anyone.
If you see anyone suspicious, go inside and tell Mom. I'm just going to Danny's and won't be long. She nodded. Meathead came trotting up on the porch, which made me feel a little better. His nose would smell someone long before she saw them. Danny and Bobby were stacking stuff into the trailer when I got there.
You don't want to take that fricking thing, do you? I asked, pointing to his gun safe, which was sitting on an appliance dolly on the front porch.
Hell yeah. We put this in one of the cabins and bolt it down. It will give us a secure place to store stuff. You can get into those cabins with a damn hammer. He had a point. So together, we wrestled it onto the trailer. After that, he asked me to help him get some stuff from the sheds. We were loading up some tools when Sarge pulled up with Ted and Doc.
You two ready?
He pointed to the safe.
What the fuck?
I said the same thing. But as he pointed out, it will give us a place to store stuff in case of intruders.
I guess you got a point. Let's get moving. We have to make this first trip back before dark.
Where's Thad? I asked.
He's going to stay here.